Getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's a great way to check out tickets. If you're going to USC Notre Dame this weekend, the cheapest tickets they have on SeatGeek right now is $73. They'll show you the best deals depending on where you want to sit. And they will search multiple ticket sites and grade every ticket based on value that'll help you immediately identify the best seats that will fit in your budget. Best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code USC today. That's promo code USC for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets.
Hey, Trojan fans. It's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. We're going to talk a little, I guess, USC Trojan football. There's only one game left in the 2018 regular season and entire season for the USC football team because they're not going to. Well, we'll see. Maybe. We don't know that yet. But potentially not bowl eligible, depending on what happens this weekend. I want to jump the gun. Sorry. I didn't even do that on purpose. That's just where your mindset is now. If that gives you any idea, it's maybe the weirdest start to the podcast ever. Keely, you are in studio. Hi.
Hello. Yeah. Is there a game this week? I don't even know. There's just madness surrounding this team and program.
There is madness. There is a game. And we also have Dan Weber on the line. Hello, Dan.
Howdy. We do have a game.
Yeah. And this is weird. This is a weird start. I've never started the show like this, but we will. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. We had a really fun show on Sunday. I had Sir Eric of Troy, who's a big, longtime listener, and a lot of positive feedback. So maybe we'll try to do some more fan interaction. Keely seems all about that. That's good. No, it's fun. I mean, we would need to get a little different perspective. It just happened to be on a craziest day of podcasting because of the loss to UCLA. Spoiler alert, USC did lose to UCLA. If you haven't watched, if you TiVo'd it and you didn't go back and watch, USC did lose. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about the future of the program, maybe Notre Dame coming up this weekend. If you have any questions or comments, podcast at uscfootball.com is the email line. You can also text us or send us a voicemail. That number is 424-254-9141. Please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Google Play or Audio Boom, all that kind of stuff. We're all over the place, and leave us some positive feedback for the podcast. This is, I think, our 11th football season doing it. We've been doing it a really long time, and we appreciate all the listeners. It's great that you guys come and listen to the show every week or multiple times a week when we've been doing a lot of shows. I know it's just, we'll probably slow down a little bit after the season that has a potential bowl game, you know. I'm saying that because USC's 5-6. They get one more win, they can go bowling. So that would be good. But we have an interesting show for you today. We got a bunch of questions. We got some voicemails that were like plus 3 minutes, like 3 minutes, and then rolled over to another 3 minutes. But I'm going to play you one of them at the end of the show from our buddy Jeff, the math teacher. So stay tuned. I'm just going to play that. It was a 3 minute, kind of ended at 3 minutes, his second time through. But I want to play that for you. That was actually a Sir Eric of Troy idea where if it's a kind of a long voicemail, we could just kind of play it at the end of the show. So I'll do that so you guys can listen to that. We got some other voicemails and some texts and stuff, but man, you guys were there. I was just watching this one on my couch and tweeting and listening on the radio and stuff. But what? Start with you, Keely. What was your reaction from the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, it was definitely rough. I, for some reason, didn't expect USC. Once I saw how they were playing, I didn't really expect USC to win. Is that weird? I mean, I didn't really have service on my phone throughout the game. But once I got on Twitter, it seemed like people were still expecting towards the end USC to win. But the way they were playing, it was just not going well. And it's just, I think it's indicative of the season as a whole. You know, Dan and I talked about instant analysis. It's just not a well-coached team. You know, the problems that plagued this team the whole season was evident in the fourth quarter and throughout the game. And the most challenging thing for me is to see the USC team before the fourth quarter starts get up and start dancing and having this big, you know, swagger, this fake swagger with no real bite to it. You know, to then get run over by Josh Kelly in the fourth quarter. It's kind of indicative of this team of they're going to talk a lot, but they can't really back it up.
Yeah, the fake swagger was not a good look. What about you, Dan? What were your thoughts?
Well, I think it's interesting what Kelly said about didn't think this team was going to win. They were playing a 2-8 team, and you didn't think they were going to win. What does that say about where this program is? I mean, and yeah, you just wanted to cover your eyes when they started all the dancing stuff. I mean, it's like, you know, is it as bad as the Alabama entrance? I don't know. But it's right there. I mean, it's just no class whatsoever, no understanding. You were up, you know, you weren't up 7 points. You were up, you know, 6 or whatever it was, 27-21. And you, of course, didn't score again. And you didn't get a chance to do any more dancing. Because you already did your dancing instead of playing, you know. I mean, that was disappointing beyond belief, I would think. And I will say this. The more you watch that game, the more you said, you know what? UCLA deserves to win this game. They've come a long way. They've gotten a lot better. Their kids are, you know, they got tough kids. They don't have a lot of them. They don't, but, you know, it was one of those ones where you said, man, if only USC's kids could – be like those guys. And what does that tell you when that's what you're thinking? And then you're going to have that same thought again this weekend, maybe? That's the bad news about playing your arch rivals. Almost no one in the country has two arch rivals. And you get to play them back to back. And there's really, you know, good news when you get to do that because you could end, you know, stronger than you could ever hope for. Or the bad news is, you know, you look at two teams that are obviously on the upswing and getting better and tougher and playing hard. And then you look at USC and you say, what is this?
Yeah. I felt the same thing, Keely, I looked at the team and I'm like, I don't think they're going to win. Like, if USC came out to like a 14-0 lead and okay, their athletes are just going to win this game. Yeah. But when they didn't, then you're like, I knew like from the first quarter, I was like, yeah, they're not going to win this game. I had like the same feeling. It's weird.
Yeah. It was a weird gut feel. But it's interesting because Dan called it from the beginning. If you go back to instant analysis during the week, he said this is a 2-8 UCLA team that is on the upswing, you know. And if they beat USC, even if they're 3-8, this is a win for the season.
Huge
for the
win.
Program. And I mean, look at the turn of events Saturday and then Monday with the Rams. The story is the Rams is the team of LA. Chip Kelly and UCLA are in a turnaround, and then now USC is a dumpster fire. You know, the narrative has switched so much nationally in the past like 72 hours. It's big, and Dan called it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing you got to think about. Clay Helton was 21-0 in Los Angeles with a Rose Bowl win, and you know, a win over UCLA at the Rose Bowl, and now he's 0-3 in Los Angeles. The last three games USC's played in Los Angeles under Clay, they've lost. All three upsets. All three to teams that had no business beating USC. I mean, how do you go from 21-0 to 0-3? It's unacceptable.
If you go back and go, you know what? So UCLA's going to play USC. Obviously, they're an underdog. We're going to take Todd Gurley and put him on UCLA's team and see like, oh, yeah, he might run for nearly 300 yards. Or are you going to say, we're going to take an FCS running back who really didn't do much at UC Davis and transfer him into UCLA. Oh, he's going to run for nearly 300 yards. Like, he looked like it was Todd Gurley out there. I don't know. What the heck was that?
And this is a guy who lost his starting job earlier in the year, a kid from Fresno, who when they played Fresno State, didn't even get in the game earlier in the year. He had to win his job back over a bye week. I mean, it's just...
Lancaster or something, right? He's like north of here, but not. I don't think he's all the way to the Central Valley.
Is isn't he all the way to Fresno?
I don't know. I mean, it's that direction, you know. It's like from north. It's north of here. It's like really an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours north of here. But yeah, I mean, he's a great, I mean, he's a super smiley kid, great kid. And I mean, you're happy for someone like him that grew up a UCLA fan, had one FCS offer, you know, one division, one AA basically offer. Wow. And, you know, for him to be starring for UCLA, he's had, you know, it's not like he's come out of nowhere. He's had, well, he had earlier, but that's like his fifth or sixth, like 100-yard rushing game this year.
Seventh, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so he's done some things, but never anything like this. Never, you wouldn't expect him to have, you know, 125 yards. Like, yeah, that's, I could see that. But almost 300 yards, like the most ever that anyone from UCLA has ever rushed against USC. That but seems a little
strange. I think they're going to have to put an asterisk in the record book because UCLA lined up in some formations that USC hadn't seen. So how in the world are you supposed to tackle a guy when you just really don't know where you're supposed to line up or whatever? I mean, it's just, come on, that's not fair.
And even then, even though Clay Hilton said that, I went back and watched Clancy Pendergast scrum. He was asked multiple times, did they show you things that you hadn't seen? He's like, no, we saw that. We saw that.
Oh, really?
He even did some of that when he was with the Eagles. So Clancy was like, yeah, we saw it.
Well, I mean, I think the difference was they did it some other games, but they did it against USC and it worked so well. And that's one of the things about Chip Kelly. If it works well, he's going to keep doing it. And it was working as, you know, well as you could possibly hope for anything. And so he kept doing it. I mean, of course, they haven't done it in other games because it didn't work that well. But against USC, whoo.
Well, we probably don't need to talk about that game anymore. But
can I make one more complaint about this game? I don't know why. I probably sound like get off my lawn kind of curmudgeon. But
you're 22 or something. You're not. Or 23?
I'm 23.
Okay.
But I just, coming off the Cal game where you lose so in such a small margin. You have Iman Marshall make that boneheaded play, jawing at the sideline. Too much swagger coming into that game. Of course, Clay Helton played it up that Biggie apologized to the team. It was a learning lesson, blah, 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 blah. And then you come into this game, and like I said, they're doing the whole swagger dancing thing. And then you have Brandon Peely throwing punches. It's like, it's such an embarrassing, undisciplined performance. It's just such a bad look for the program.
When you know a bowl bid's on the line.
He only got in one more play, though.
You know? Right.
I mean, they made him stand by Clay most of the rest of the game, except for that time they put him back in. Yeah.
That's where, too, like, he should be out or not. I mean, I don't know why you'd play one more play. Like, that just kind of shows, like, look, you're either out or play, you know?
Yeah.
That's just such a half-assed kind of way to do it. Like one more, you play one more play. I don't get it. But yeah, and I think I did like the Pac-12 morning show the other day. And like, do you get why people try to punch other people in the helmet? And I never do. I'll never understand that. It doesn't seem very smart. Like,
well, when you do it right in front of the officials, it's like so not smart. You're already not smart by hitting, you know, the guy with the face mask or the helmet, but. And then, you know, you doubly dumb down when you do it in front of an official. I mean, it's like, good Lord.
If you're in a back alley and some guy's wearing a helmet, I would not punch him in the head. You know, like, I'm just not like, hey, nobody's
watching.
You pull
the helmet off, you grab it, you pull it off, then you hit him with his helmet.
Yeah.
But you don't hit the helmet, you know.
I've learned never to be in an alley with Dan now. He knows the moves.
He'll pull the helmet off. All right. Yeah. Well, I guess we can move on to some questions. I'm sure there's some upbeat things to talk about, Keely.
So upbeat.
You want to start?
I have
a few voicemails, but you can start with some.
We have a question from George in Oxnard who says it's a kind of a shoulda, coulda, woulda question. He says, there are tons of things that Clay Helton has done and not done to put this team in a sad situation, but can you pinpoint to one key thing? Fill in the blank. If Clay would have only blank, this team would have been so much better off this season.
I just think if they would connect how they practice with what they want to do in games. And the fact that if you can't do it in practice, if you don't do it in practice, if you don't scheme it, for example, if you say, we're going to have a freshman quarterback, 18 years old, we need to be able to run the ball for him, you know, then that's all you do in spring ball. And it's all you do in August. You make sure that you can run the football. You know you've got a decent set of receivers. You know you got a kid that can do some special things throwing the ball. all you need to be able to do is be the run first team you said you were going to be, and you have a decent group of running backs. Then you just make it happen. He couldn't make it happen, didn't make it happen, and here's the result. I think that was the crucial failing in terms of a football failing, was that inability to be the run-first team that they said they were going to be with a veteran offensive line. That was it. You do that. If you could have run the ball with this team, JT Daniels has an unbelievably good year. But when the only thing you've got, the only way you can beat people is have JT Daniels throw passes you wouldn't ask Jared Goff to throw. You wouldn't ask, I mean, you barely asked Mahomes to throw him. And you see what happens. I mean, you know, he's got to make like a hero play every time. And the genius fans want to make him the bad, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, JT's the bad. And that just absolutely drives me crazy that they want to blame JT. Yeah. I mean, that's just nuts. But that was the key crucial flaw in this team this year, and that was Clay's fault. You've got to be able, if you're going to talk run first and you know what the situation is, you have to be able to run the ball. They couldn't because they're not tough enough. They don't work at it. They don't practice it. They don't believe in it, and they get away from it. Whereas you saw with UCLA, they didn't get away from it. They yeah. believed in it. They stayed after it, and they made it happen. USC doesn't make stuff happen. They hope stuff happens. They don't make stuff happen. That's the flaw.
I think
fatal flaw.
Along the same lines, so let you answer it too, Keely, but I would say, like, really, like, I agree with you, Dad. I would say make the change of the offensive line coach before the season. So then it would, even if you bring in Tim Drevno, he's not out of position coaching running backs. It forces you to bring in an actual running backs coach. And, you know, if it's Tim Drevno or whoever, you have someone else coaching the offensive line. And I think you're in a better position to run the ball better this year. So that's one move. By not making that, you've kind of screwed two positions, the running backs and the offensive line. So I think if you make that earlier, you help things out.
Well, it's all part of a whole, because that's all part of the same thing with the run game. And so you went from the best running backs coach maybe in the country in DeLann McCullough to no running back coach, basically. I mean, how does that work?
That's hard to argue that, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with both of you. I think just to go in a different direction, I think maybe being more realistic and being less stubborn, you know, taking what, if you're not going to make any changes to your philosophy, taking what your team is showing you. So, hey, maybe we need to make a change with Toa. Maybe if we're struggling in the red zone, we need to kick a field goal against ASU, against Cal, and not go for a fake, you know? Make those tough changes that, instead of pretending like it's going to be fine if you watch tape, I mean, like, hey, we're making arm tackles. Maybe we should tackle harder or focus on actually tackling in practice, you know, being realistic and not trying to be prideful and stubborn and be, oh, it's okay if we watch tape or something like that.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah, like this week, we didn't see the little dummies on the tires. And remember the little form tackle? I mean, it's like, you know, compared to what a lot of teams do, it's not much, but it's something. And some weeks they're there and some weeks they're not. And, you know, some weeks USC tackles people and some weeks they don't. I think that's a problem. I think what Kelly said about the being realistic. I think by the end of August, you probably should have practiced the way you needed to practice to know that you weren't going to be able to run the ball with this offensive line. At that point, do you say, we go to the Washington State, you know, kind of air raid attack? You got wide receivers. You got a quarterback that can probably throw the ball pretty well. Do you forget trying to run the ball? Because mostly you can't. And do you go very un-USC-like and more Washington State-like? I think that would have been, you'd have had a better chance to succeed this year. You'd have had to admit, we can't run the ball. We aren't going to look like a USC team. You might have had a better chance.
Or even taking it further, coming into fall camp, we know JT Daniels is going to be the quarterback. So let's make it the decision early, get chemistry with the wide receivers, so that 4 weeks later when they actually do have chemistry, they're not like, oh, yeah, that actually was a problem. I'm a little spicy today.
Fair. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, the quarterback competition was You know, and I do think they wasted spring. Now that we look back at it, they got very little. The one thing I thought they got done, that I was pleased coming out of spring. I said, wow, they have two pretty good young centers who can snap it really well. They're going to be in pretty good shape. We don't know what Toa's situation is going to be. And of course, that was of no value at all. It's like that didn't even happen. You know, they're like, you know.
Well, hey, we got a voicemail, Dan, that I think you're going to love. By my love, I mean you're going to hate. So I'm going to play it. And it's a JT Daniels one.
Hey, Ryan, how are you? This is Peter from Scottsdale, Arizona. Enjoy the show immensely. Keep up the great work. And I especially enjoyed Sir Eric of Troy's cameo appearance the other night. Really enjoyed his take on everything. And my question is for Dan Weber. Dan, appreciate everything you do, and I'd love if you could address the question that everybody seems to be beating around the bush about, because it seems obvious to me that a deal was struck to allow JT Daniels to start immediately. I could sense almost that perhaps Clay Helton's the type of individual that would perhaps get run over by JT Daniels' dad during the recruiting process, because, you know, it's obvious to me Jack here is a better athlete, and I think he's a better leader on the field. Thanks very much, and take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Well, it might be obvious to Scottsdale. I guess you got, you know, really good binoculars from Scottsdale to be able to discern that. I don't think that's, you know, hadn't been the case. I mean, you could have come to spring ball. How good did it go in spring ball? JT, it's easy to come up with conspiracy theories about, you know, this and this, whatever. I mean, it took one day of summer throwing to make it clear who had the higher upside. I mean, people act like JT didn't throw for 337 yards and two touchdowns Saturday. I mean, come on, behind that offensive line. And, you know, for example, has Tyler Vaughn shown up for the game yet? I mean, I shouldn't say that, but I mean, that was tough. They were allowing UCLA to basically, you know, tackle, grab, throw down USC's receivers. It's clear the Pac-12 has made it. They don't want to keep calling, you know, pass interference because they're embarrassed. And UCLA took great advantage of that. And a guy like Tyler, as slim as he is, not a whole lot bigger and stronger than he was, it was really tough. So you didn't have many guys to throw the ball to. And I thought JT had an unbelievably good game for an 18-year-old. And, you know, oh, he had the one interception, you know, where the ball comes loose as he's trying to throw it away. If you say we have to have an athlete at quarterback because he's going to be in so much trouble, just like Sam was for the last 2 years, that we better get a guy, you know, who could win, you know, the decathlon, because he's going to have to do all that stuff, whether he's a, you know, great quarterback or not a great quarterback. He's going to have to, well, I think you need a guy who can throw the ball to play quarterback. Now, you have to figure out how can he do that successfully. You can't just say, this guy's the best, you know, he got the best wheels, so we'll put him in there because we know we can't block for him. We'll break down in places where we don't have any idea. We won't be able to run the ball to force people not to be able to come after him and, you know, play the pass all the time. I mean, so I just think it's unfair to go after JT. I just think, he's clearly got the highest upside. And I think Jack, you know, did a great job. And one of the advantages Jack had was once he was third in the quarterback competition at the end of August, he basically didn't get coached for 2 months. He was on
his own.
That
was a huge boost for him, yeah.
It was a heck of an advantage he had because he didn't get reps. He probably didn't listen, you know, get much to do in the quarterback room.
Ouch.
And then he comes in there and they say, what can we do with Jack to cut the offense down just to get it exactly, you know, what he can do? It would have been nice all year if they'd have thought that same thing about JT.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they're asking him to make throws. Literally, you would not be asking Pat Mahomes' kid to be making. I mean, it's just, I mean, how did Mahomes do with those hero ball throws? I mean, the first interception of the second half, they take a shot out of the end zone and throw it 55 yards or whatever. Well, I mean, that wasn't – I mean, JT didn't call that play. They just, you know, launch it. Well, I mean, that's one of those ones that if the coach wants to do that, you go ahead and do it. But you know, why did you do that? I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, he looked the best in camp. To be fair, you know, he was clearly the better quarterback. But yeah, we felt Sears was second, and he ends up being demoted to third. And I like the way Sears played against Arizona State, and I wouldn't have an issue if they brought him in for a series or two where you let him like run, because they don't let JT run. So I don't have an issue with anything like that. And the people that were saying he should have started against UCLA, it could have been Matt Fink. Like, we didn't even know if Sears got demoted again to third. Like, people are saying, oh, Sears is the best. Clay Helton might feel like he's still third. Like, he didn't mention who was going to be the backup to JT. So even if you didn't play JT, and if Matt Fink was ready, that could have been Clay Helton's call to put Matt Fink in instead of Jack Sears, which obviously that's not what the fans wanted either.
Well, and then you put Jack in, and you're going to say, okay, well, let's run the option with him. But they haven't worked on it all year.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you know the ball's not going to be bouncing around like it did against Arizona State on that one play? I mean, I don't know that, you know, you can say both Jack and Matt have better wheels, but they don't really work at it with them in terms of being really efficient. I mean, like, I guess the other night, last night, Jared Goff, they had a couple of times tried to run a speed option with him. He doesn't do it enough. He had the same situation where one defender was able to play him and, you know, the pitch back. I guess it was Gurley. You have to really run that to get it right. And they haven't approached things well in terms of fitting the offense to the talent that they've got. They haven't been realistic. Keely, again, that's the right word for one of the big problems with this team is the lack of, you know, the inability to be realistic about who you are and what you can do and what it takes to get that done. And but I just think it's so unfair to take it out on JT Daniels. That's just not right. I mean, it's just whether you think there was a deal or wasn't a deal or whatever you think there was, and you don't know that. I don't know why would anybody say something that they can't possibly know. You know, you can't possibly know that there was some deal. I mean, I kind of wish there had been, so that they just bring him in and he gets all the snaps in August and gets 2 weeks of, you know, where they're not dividing them up, you know, into thirds. It would have helped. It would have absolutely helped those early two losses. So if they did cut a deal and they knew it was going to happen, they didn't do a very good job of it. Figuring it out, how it works. Now, you could say, well, so what? That's what they always do. They don't figure it out. But it didn't look like they had made an absolute deal, because JT should have gotten more snaps in August, and he didn't.
We have a question from Steve in Poway, who says, isn't there a school of thought that prospective head coaches would actually rather be hired by a program with huge potential like USC's but that has a losing record and is not bowl eligible? That way, expectations will be reasonable in the first few years. Think Pete Carroll coming in after Paul Hackett, which will allow them some time to build the program back up to where they want it to be.
Yeah, I think there are some real upsides to the USC job. I mean, if you're looking at it from the outside, you see all the potential recruits, all the talent, that the guys that could take a bus to campus and all of that. So there are so many ways. You see the history. Now, you don't see the downside. You know, you don't maybe see what about the weight program. You don't see what about the nutrition program. You don't see, is there anybody in the recruiting staff now? You know, you may not see all those things, but if you're a guy on the outside who's an alpha head coach, you're saying, well, I'm going to get that. We're just going to do that. We're going to tell them this is what, you know. So I think that makes the job actually more attractive. The worse they look, the worse they underachieve, the better you're going to look right away. I mean, if I looked at this USC roster and I were one of those guys, I'd say, hell, we'll win the Pac-12 for the next however many years. I mean, you know, you just say we'll go from, you know, worst to first in a heartbeat. This is the perfect place. So, yeah, I think for a lot of guys, this would be the place to go. I mean, there are about five places in America that if you have the right coach, you can win a national championship. You absolutely, and in USC's case, you will win a national championship, and you have won a national championship. The four coaches that were capable of it, you could go to a lot of schools in America, be the best coach. Pete Carroll could have gone a lot of places in America and had that run that he had. He wouldn't have won national championships. At USC, he did. That's what the difference is with USC. You have that ability. There are an awful lot of places you can't even think about that. And, yeah. You know, I mean, we're still not sure if Notre Dame is still in that class or not. But, you know, Alabama's obviously, you know, there. And Clemson has come from outside into that, you know, class. And, you know, Ohio State has to be if they do the job right. I'm not sure Michigan's still in that class. They haven't done it for so long. But USC's in that class. They're in that group of, if they have the right coach, they can win a national championship and probably will. You know, maybe Georgia's in there. But again, they haven't done it either. USC's done it. So, you know, and if you have the right guys, you'll win a Heisman Trophy. And just a lot of things that USC that nobody else has, other than this, you know, small group. And Texas probably isn't in there. Not quite. Oklahoma, kind of on the cusp of being in there. But so I think USC going bad actually is a better a draw for some coaches. I think you'd look awfully good next year at USC.
The thing I would disagree, though, with Steve is I don't think the expectations would be lower because they're 5-7. Like, no, they still expect to be – or potentially 6-6. Maybe 7-6. I don't think that changes the expectations. You go out and hire a big – yeah, you're going to hire someone, you expect them to come in and win because they know there's talent on this team. You basically are looking at that like, oh, just come in and make the talent work because the last coach couldn't do that.
But if you do, like, for example, in the last case, if you elevate a never-been-a-head-coach, Clay Helton, those expectations from the people at USC, the expectations of hiring Clay Helton were he will not embarrass us the way Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian did. That's it. That was the number one expectation because of what had happened. And the two previous coaches that had to be fired in midseason. Again, they probably were telling themselves, well, we won't have to fire Clay at midseason. Okay, well, that's not a probably enough of an expectation on a program like USC.
We got another voicemail I'll play for you. Here you go.
Hi, this is Richard from Toluca Lake, right after the game. When you lose a game to a fellow who is a transfer from UC Davis and has a career game against USC, and you lose on a 2-8 team, it's time to fire help. Dan Weber talked last week about losing the fan base, and I can tell you from personal experience, my dad and I have been season ticket holders for over 60 years between us. And the way the USC administration, the athletic department, and USC football has treated the fan base for the last 3 or 4 years, it's ridiculous. It's unfair. We're done. We will not be back next year. I'm going to be watching the games from home. Lynn Swann needs to go immediately, and it needs to have an immediate search for a recruiting process where we get a name football coach. No Lane Kiffin, no Steve Sarkisian, no Clay Helton, no Paul Hackett. Think about it. 4 out of the last 5 coaches have been fired. They've been mediocre and terrible. Thanks very much, you guys. I enjoy your program, and I would love to hear Dan Weber's comments. Take care and fight on.
Yeah, Toluca Lake, you got it. I mean, for example, the only guy that has been successful was their fourth choice, and they only got Pete because Pete recruited them. You know, Pete wanted to get back into coaching after being out of a year. And the first three passed, And so they were left standing, you know, with Pete. So that wasn't a choice. You know, they didn't have anywhere else to go, pretty much. Yeah, I will say this. If we played your voicemail for the powers that be at USC, all you would see is a bunch of people with their fingers in their ears. They're not listening. They're not hearing you. They're in a bubble. I mean, it's amazing. I don't know if they know you exist. You think they couldn't possibly not know. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. And maybe it hasn't hit yet. The number of people that have told me they're canceling their tickets for next year, I hardly know. There are way more than have said they're getting their, you know, they're renewing their tickets next year. So I don't know if that has, those numbers have hit them yet, but they're gonna, if they don't, you know, get this moving in the right direction. That there's kind of a, you know, they're sort of stuck as to do we go or do we stay or whatever, tells you that they probably don't have any understanding of what's about to come. Now, maybe last night's game with the Rams made it pretty clear that that's what LA needs. That's what they want. That's what they respond to. You can't respond. I mean, you could hear just on the, from the TV guys, they were amazed at how exciting and how loud and how into it. People don't give you LA fans enough credit. They're just more discerning. I mean, they want a good product, and they got a lot of other options if the product's not any good. But if it's good, they will turn out, they will make noise. Somehow they figured out how to get all those people into the car. I have no idea where they all parked. I have no idea how they got there. They were there, you know, early. They made noise all night. They didn't want to leave. That's what you have to do in Los Angeles. And I'm just not sure if the people running things at USC understand that, that it's not just, hey, we're USC, do what we tell you. I mean, basically, as Ryan pointed out, Lynn lectured USC's fans about how they should be, you know, this is what you need to do. Not what USC needs to do, but what the fans need to do. You need to support us because we're USC. You know, no, do something that makes it worthwhile, you know, makes fans feel like they want to support you, not because they owe it to you. They don't. And you're about to find out that people don't think they owe USC anything if USC doesn't, you know, respond in kind.
I thought it was interesting how there was a thread that started on the Parasol today about potentially taking out a whole page ad in the LA Times telling USC to fire Clay Helton. I mean, would that at least get some attention? I think the whole embarrassment part is what actually gets their attention.
I think it would too. I mean, you know, my wife was very close to the Tennessee Vol Twitter movement and everything that happened when they were upset with how that coaching search was going, and, you know, Butch Jones. There was just a huge mess going on there. And that was after a decade of just dysfunction at the Tennessee football program. But she said it made a difference, you know, having everyone on Twitter, like the social media stuff too, but they had actual protests on the campus, and it's a public school. So they could call like representatives, they could call, you know, state senators and things. So you can't do that at USC, but yeah, if Heritage Hall is a pretty open space, like if you had a bunch of fans there going, hey, we don't feel like you're listening to us. You know, we want what's best for our football program, and we don't feel like you're taking it in the right direction. That would get I mean, the LA Times would show up, and, you know, we would show up and we would take pictures, and it would be talked about nationally. Like, here's the fan base. Now, it's not going to be the pure outrage. It's not like live and die like Tennessee.
Well, there will be no couch burnings or mattress burnings. That will not happen. Okay. So there will be a little more decorum in LA.
But if Lynn Swann tries to walk out of his office to go to lunch and there's like the whole lobby is full of people, like, he's going to hate that. That's going to be really annoying. Now, it might make him like, I'm going to show them. We're definitely not going to do anything. Like, he might go the opposite direction, but I think it would make a difference if fans, like, I don't know if the USC fan base is going to be like, if they're going to rally and do something like that, like Tennessee did, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you know, the other thing is we have a perfect example of USC is not listening to the fan base in the Coliseum renovation. They didn't care. They absolutely said, we're going to do it our way. this is the easiest way to raise this money. This is, you know, we're going to take care of these 23 people that are going to own these suites, and we're going to redo the whole stadium in order to accommodate those suites as close to the playing field as possible. And we don't care. We're going to take away 10,000 best seats of the people who've been there since the 40s. We don't care. We're going to move them. We're going to push everybody around, and we're going to charge you more. And, you know, there's a tone deafness there that don't ever underestimate with USC. They've just gotten too big, too successful, and I think too, you know, elitist and too away from, you know, the folks that really matter. And that's that we don't know right now what they know. What are they thinking? What do they understand? I think we all feel like we know what the fans feel like right now, but do we know that anybody at USC knows? I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah. We have a question from another Steve. He's USC class of 97. He says, I'm really tired of Clay Helton and this USC team being compared to Brian Kelly and the Notre Dame team that went 4-8 in 2016. Prior to the game against USC, that Notre Dame team lost 7 games by a total of 32 points. By comparison, the 2018 USC team has lost 6 games so far by a total of 61 points, which is an average margin of defeat of about 10 points. They lost by 37 points to just Stanford and Texas. Wouldn't it be a better comparison to Helton would be former Oregon coach Mark Helfrich. Both are considered nice guys who had early success largely due to sensational quarterbacks who covered up for coaching flaws only to see their respective programs tank once the quarterback was gone. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, good. That's a really good comparison. I think like Oregon is terrific. Yeah. And yeah, Mark Helfrich, it's, you know, one of those, you know, I'll take your players and keep them going for a little while. But then, you know, that time comes and I got to take mine and really make it happen. And you know, I mean, the player he took, you know, obviously USC took was Sam Darnold. And, you know, once Sam was gone, you know, he could run out of trouble. And that isn't, you know, happening now. I mean, not that that was a good way to go. I mean, to, you know, predicate your team on a quarterback who can, you know, escape all the problems that, you know, the way you scheme it up and coach it up. But, yeah, that's a really, I mean, I think the Notre Dame, obviously because they're playing Notre Dame this week, and Clay was, I think, was pretty much the person that introduced the Notre Dame comparison as, you know, kind of, well, you know, they could do it, you know, we can do it. And that is where you would like to have more opportunity to say, oh, you're going to fire all your assistant coaches the way they did at Notre Dame? You know, is that what your AD is going to tell you to do? And are you good with that? Is that okay? And that's probably not what he really meant. I mean, but it's, if you're in the position they're in now, you hold out things like, you know, it's similar to Larry Scott saying, well, we may go 12 years with a really bad TV contract, but I think, you know, Google and Netflix and Amazon and Apple are going to do something about college football, which, of course, they have no idea if that's going to happen or not. But they hold that out there like, so hire me for another 12 years and maybe we'll get a new contract with one of those people who've shown no interest. And that's what I think Clay's doing in this case, is trying to say, well, Notre Dame did it and now we can do it too. Yeah. Okay.
Do you have another one, Keely, or?
You can do a voicemail.
Okay. We'll do one. We had one last voicemail and then we'll.
Hi guys. This question's for Dan. My mom and dad are Texas alumni, and a brief history on me. I actually grew up a Texas fan, with my last game rooting for them being the Texas SC National Championship game because I was a senior in high school and wouldn't get accepted to SC for another month or two. Last night, we took my dad to the Texas-Iowa State game for his 60th birthday, and after watching the Texas defense dominate and suffocate what was supposed to be a pretty good Iowa State offense, it just reminded me of some of the dominant defensive performances during my tenure at SC, where we would also just flatten teams that were also supposed to have pretty good offenses. Also, it couldn't be more clear the trajectory difference between these two teams. With Texas poised to make a playoff run next year, and who knows what they would have done this year if Ellinger hadn't had shoulder issues. Then you contrast that with SC, who is obviously just lost right now. My question is, what will it take to get SC back to dominant defensive performances, and what coaches will be able to do that for us? Fight on, Jason of Longhorn Country.
Yeah, Jason, I don't know that. I mean, I think it's, you know, people say, well, is it the defensive coordinator? And I think you've got a little more chance to operate on your own if nothing else changes. But you still aren't going to get a chance to do much tackling in practice. You're still not going to get a go, you know, full go competitively. You know, you don't have to take people to the ground and all that. But you know, they just, for example, they got beat to the punch Saturday. They just weren't ready. And that's what we don't know week to week, who's ready to play the week before. The defense was ready to play. The offense wasn't. And you have to put it all together, and it has to all work. You know, the offense has to help the defense. The defense has to help the offense. And the offense, much of the time, doesn't go hard enough and game conditions enough to give the defense the kind of look that you need to get to be ready to play full speed. And they clearly weren't ready to play full speed at any time Saturday. I mean, they just were beaten to the punch virtually every single play. And that's happened too much, it seems like, where you've got a defense that you think ought to be able to compete. Now, obviously, you've lost four safeties. I think Talanoa Hufanga he might have been the best tackler on this team. And then the other really, really good natural, you know, tackler can't get in the game because he's playing the same position as Cam Smith. I mean, it just, like, they haven't solved, you know, problems. You know, how do you get him on the field? How do you get, you know, EA on the field? I don't know. So he sits on the bench. And if you wanted to, you know, if you had somebody on the USC team the other day, if you said, who could we get that will take Josh Kelly one-on-one and put him on the ground? Well, he's the guy on the bench for USC, the freshman linebacker from Las Vegas, who probably is wondering, what do I got to do to get in a game here? And so there's, you know, I think a lot of things going on with that, with the defense. I mean, they end up in, you know, situations where, you know, they get a couple of stops and it's like third and eight and it's like, oh, this is great. And then they drop into a soft zone where they give up 12 yard completions. And you just think, what was the point of stopping them on the first two plays if you're going to, you know, back off and act like, oh yeah, we can't let them beat us deep. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not what they're going to do on third and eight, but you just see some strange choices, some strange personnel things. And you do see USC's had some bad breaks in terms of losing Porter Gustin and Talanoa, who was third string coming out of August, which are other kinds of issues. You just don't know how are they making decisions and how difficult is this defense? I mean, are you going to run an NFL defense where freshmen pretty much don't need to apply unless everybody ahead of them, you know, gets washed out and a guy like Talanoa gets in the game and then everybody says, wow, kid can really play. Huh. So many issues, but you're right. You can control games with defense. If you don't let the other team in the game, you can't lose. You're not going to lose. I mean, all that, you know, you had one job Saturday was to stop Josh Kelly. They didn't even come close. I mean, one job, one thing they had to do. And it's just not going together well at all. Offense, defense, you name it, just not making it happen. And but I would like to see them if they start over again with a coach who puts it together on defense. I think that was the secret with Pete Carroll, that you had to work so hard to have success against those USC teams. And teams eventually just said, oh, the heck with it. We'll come back next week, but this is going to be too hard. And that's what you have to do, I think, in football, to be at that very, very top level. Obviously, it's what Alabama does every week. You just make it clear to the team you're playing, it's going to be way too hard to get done what we hoped we could get done this week. And they're just too tough. But nobody's used the word tough around a USC team for a good while. And I think that's the essence of defense.
We have a rant from Rick from LA. He's a USC band alum. He says, "Hey, Ryan and crew, Lynn Swann should do us all a favor and fire this clown," meaning Clay Helton. "Even if he does come back next year, who in their right mind would want to work for this guy? My guess is none. It's painfully obvious that Clay lacks experience. Sure, he won a Rose Bowl and a Pac-12 championship, all great things, but we can all admit that Sam Darnold saved this guy's job. Going 5-7 is horrible for a team that has a top 5 recruiting class. We know they're not beating Notre Dame next week. This would be the first time since 2000 when Paul Hackett was coach that USC is not bowl eligible and the sanctioned years don't count. All right, enough of my rant. Thanks for all you do. Fight on."
Yeah, I mean, the 5-7, every time you hear somebody say that, it's so jarring. Or that you're not going to go to – I mean, take a look at the teams that are going bowling, the 78 teams. There's like 65 of them that you just say, what? They're going bowling? And USC's not? How is that possible? It shouldn't be possible. I mean, it's hard to imagine that they've fallen to this place. I mean, the last three losses in the Pac-12, the really not good at all Pac-12, that you've lost three straight games in Los Angeles to the likes of Arizona State and Cal and UCLA is. It's impossible to do that. I mean, how could they have done that? And it's a fall that you couldn't have even begun to have predicted how badly this has gone. And yet, you know, there are people saying we're going to be fine. We're in a good place. Next year, things look really good. We'll have this shiny new Coliseum for all the million-dollar donors, and everything's going to be great. But unless you happen to be sitting in one of those seats that are blocked by the new tower, it won't be so great. But I'm guessing that's not going to be a problem. They're probably not going to sell all the seats next year. And tough schedule next year. I mean, they've got to get better. Next year, the road schedule is tougher all the way through. The Pac-12 schedule is probably tougher, although, you know, USC, as crazy as it is, USC beat the best team in the Pac-12 this year and didn't play very well in doing it. So who knows how this is going to play out, but rant, I think, rant on. Maybe that's that'll be the new motto. Rant on. Yeah.
Rant on. Rant on.
We got an email.
Interesting, it came from a band guy. I always have wondered, what if Art Bartner took over the football coaching job for a week and Clay got to be the band director? I'm just wondering, would they get Trojans spelled right, do you think? And would the football team think, holy criminy, that guy's yelling at us. What's going on? He's a meanie. I don't know. I would like to do that switch though sometime and just say, Art, you can coach him.
I've always been curious. Jovan, the water polo coach for men and women's water polo, he's insane. I've watched his practices.
He's a badass, yeah.
He is crazy good at his job. And I'm like, what? If you just switch that over, what would happen? Also, we got a comment on our instant analysis that said if Clay took over a morgue, bodies would stop dying. So people are saying, like, to Dan's point, that they wouldn't spell Trojans. They're not sure. I know. People are really turning against Clay. It's crazy.
It's rough.
We have an email from John in Oakland who says, my question is this. Do you think he, and he didn't specify who, I'm assuming it's Jack Del Rio, wants the USC job because he's angry and embarrassed at what the football team has become, or because he wants back into the NFL coaching job circle and the USC job gives him the best chance at rehabilitating his name and image as head coach? My point is this. USC needs a head coach that wants to be at USC. Every previous coach in the history of the program wanted to coach at USC. None had to be convinced. Most of the names being thrown out by fans, Peterson, Whittingham, Franklin, Campbell, etc., are happy and having success where they are and not looking to move. So if Del Rio truly wants to coach at USC and fix the football program, he might be worth the risk. Thoughts?
He's an interesting call. I mean, I'm not the biggest, you know, NFL proponent, and I know people get it wrong when they say, well, Peter, you know, Carroll was an NFL guy. Yeah, but he also coached at, you know, University of Pacific and Arkansas and North Carolina State and Ohio State. He'd been a college coach. He coached, you know, coached in the Rose Bowl against USC. So Pete knew exactly what he was getting into. And his whole competitive nature turned recruiting into, you know, something that Pete loved to do. There are so few NFL guys who would love to come in and recruit the way Pete did. So it gets me nervous a little bit, but, you know, Jack Del Rio, if he could donate some of the money that he's going to get from the Oakland Raiders for the next couple of years, the $6 million a year, take less from USC, and they could put that to, you know, going out and hiring the best offensive coordinator and the best defensive coordinator and the best recruiting coordinator in the country for Jack Del Rio, you know, there might be a way of making that work. But you have to have a whole lot of things come together, including really smart people at USC figuring out how to do this. And it's obvious that can't happen. You can't have people who have never hired anybody for a, you know, college job. There are things that are happening. It drove us crazy last year when thanks to Ryan, he wanted to ask at the Pac-12 championship game, how did the Pac-12 understand that they were the ones who probably had a big hand in USC not being considered last year as the Pac-12 champs for the place in the college football playoffs because of the Friday night game that USC lost, and how every single team who had to have a short week travel Friday night game after traveling the week before had lost. And Larry Scott said, wow, nobody ever said that. We didn't realize, blah, 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 you know. And you just think that's part of the problem. If you don't even know what's going on, everybody on the P knew that was a problem. But the guy making $4 million a year to run the Pac-12, he didn't know that was a problem. Well, you got the same thing. You know, the discussion, if you are on the P every day, you really do understand what the issues are and what the upsides and the downsides and all that. You're not sure if anybody at USC, if they're not reading the P, has any idea what all is going on with that. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, I don't know if they know enough to, you know, have the kinds of discussions and considerations that we have on the P. And I'm not just trying to pat ourselves on the back. I just think it's kind of the reality of things. We've got a lot of people who know a lot of things, and everybody comes together and they bring their point of view and some of them are really dumb. But everybody's throwing stuff out there, and there's a lot of stuff, you know, being considered, a lot of people thinking about a lot of interesting, smart things. And is that happening at USC? I don't think there's any sign that it is.
The one thing on Jack Del Rio real quick. Oh, sorry, Keely. But I my rules. College experience, head coach doesn't know the fight song. I've said it 1,000 times. You could probably talk. There's good things about Del Rio. It might work. But I'm just saying, like, this is just kind of what my rules are because USC's done this over and over again. Colorado has a job opening. Would they interview Jack Del Rio? That's not as good of a job as USC. I don't think they would interview Jack Del Rio. UCLA had a job opening last year. Would they have interviewed Jack Del Rio? That tells me the only reason you're interviewing him is because he played at USC. And if that's a huge reason why, I don't think that's the right reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they obviously with Pete Carroll, I mean, they didn't even know to go after Pete. Pete came after them. I mean, I think it's possible to have those things work out.
Sure, it's possible.
But, you know, how many of those can you, you know, how many can you draw to an inside straight? You know, you may, maybe you do it. But
USC's drawn to way too many inside straights. You get the a proven college coach at this point. If there's an opening, which we don't even know yet, if there's an opening, I think you got to go proven college. That's it.
Yeah. No question about it. No question about it. If money is such a big deal and you can cut a deal with, Del Rio, I mean, I think you need to go in a different direction first, but you got to go in the right direction second. And that's, one of the problems that USC had, obviously, with Lane and Sark and Helton was no one trusted anyone to conduct a proper coaching search. And they were right, as it turns out. And obviously, if you go back and look through the 90s and what happened, again, no one at USC knew how to hire a football coach. So that's part of the problem is who would you trust to do the search properly? Ryan, you, me? But who really at USC right now do you trust?
Yeah.
So I took a quick glance at the P while you guys were talking about that. The P has already organized enough money to fly a plane over the Coliseum before the Notre Dame game to fly a banner to say Fire Helton.
Wait, was it like a GoFundMe or
There's
something?
There's a GoFundMe already up right now. Yeah. They've raised enough money for the plane. Now they're raising money to do the full page ad in the LA Times.
Brady McCullough tweeted like, "Hey, I hope you guys do it," because
it'll help him.
I did one back in 2002. I flew a plane over the Coliseum.
You personally flew it?
I paid for it.
Okay.
It was a promotional thing for USCfootball.com, but it said Carson for Heisman because Carson Palmer was, his Heisman campaign. It was like early November, I think. And I said USCfootball.com on it.
So were probably 2 weeks ahead of the USC people.
They really weren't promoting it. And it was like part of the thing. It was like a promotion for the site. And I flew that and it made like TV and everything. And back then, I don't even know if I told you guys this before. Yeah. I think I told you before. It cost $250 for like an hour and a half or 2 hours of the plane flying over. That's all it cost. It was post 9/11, so you couldn't like fly it during the game. It was during the tailgating stuff. But you're not allowed. You have to be out of that airspace like an hour or 30 minutes or something before the game starts because of the because of 9/11. Yeah. But I did it, and it was like I don't know what it costs now, but back then it was only like $250.
You would think it would cost you at least that much in gas.
Yeah, completely. Plane,
wouldn't you? holy
It's got to cost a lot more now, but back then it was way cheaper.
Apparently it's $2,000 now.
$2,000?
I know, you got a deal, right?
That's a huge deal.
Crazy.
Wow.
Crazy. The power of the P, that's all I'm going to say. we have an email David from Behind the Orange Curtain who says, I'm generally not a fan of conspiracy theories, so buckle up everyone, but given my frustrations with the inability of USC to deal with the current coaching staff, I've become a bit open to conjectures. So bear with me. One, the USC administration is overrun with Title IX warriors, referencing Dan's taking note of chief threat officer or whatever ridiculous title it was. Clay Helton is very supportive of their efforts. Every time they've aimed their guns at a ball player, Helton folded. Hence, they would protect him at all costs. True? Two, the USC administration does not want a successful football program. They see it as a deterrent to their efforts to raise the academic stature of the university. While I believe just the opposite, a strong coach would push the exposure on the football program and away from their rising academic stature. True?
Well, I don't know that you have to believe in a conspiracy to believe that those things could happen. I think you can do just as much damage by not caring enough about, you don't have to want the football program to go away. You just don't care enough to do the things that have to be done or to allow them, to happen. And, you can do that. I mean, Stanford has shown that. And obviously Notre Dame is academic, they're in that same tier with USC in the top 25, academic universities right now, and you 20 to 25 area, something like that. And Notre Dame hasn't had to back off their academic, you know, achievements or commitments, but they know how important football is to their identity and their, you know, national, you know, fan base and their national kind of, you know, alumni, unofficial alumni groups and all that, that Notre Dame is not going to back off from football. And, you know, whether they, you know, it goes smoothly or not sometimes in the battle between the head coaches and the admissions people and all that. I think USC just has to recognize how important football is to USC's identity forever. I mean, from the time USC in the 20s started to become, you know, a serious, you know, institution of, you know, higher education, football and the Coliseum, it all went, you know, together, and it's always going to be together. And USC can't turn its back, I don't think, on its football tradition that created the awareness of, you know, of USC and the nation. And so I think they could get away from being, you know, promoting football and being conscious of football without a conspiracy that they want to take it down. They just don't understand how they, you know, they're tied into football. Football really matters, I think, for USC, and doing it badly also matters. And you can do it well and still have, you know, great academics and still be proud as heck of you know, all of that. But I'm not a big conspiracy guy. I think things happen, for other reasons, and you can, you know, stitch a conspiracy theory together. But I think it's mostly, more, not a positive, willingness to take it down, but just sort of a turning your back on it and letting it just kind of, you know, drift, which I think is where it is right now.
We have one final question, a simple one from Jack from New Jersey, who says, if USC truly has the fourth best rated roster in the country, then you tell me what the problem is. Coaching, maybe?
You think? Huh?
I told you it was a simple question.
Think? Even in New Jersey, I think maybe. I mean, Ryan, you know this. But basically, the recruiting numbers correlate pretty much with the, you know, the rankings. I mean, you know, you look around and you say those teams that are, you know, the top 25, maybe 22 of them are, you know, well, at least they were. I guess there's some outliers in there now. But basically, the top recruiting rankings are the top teams in the country. And USC is the biggest outlier by far to be wherever it is, fourth, fifth, however, for it to be where it is, you know, on the football field this year with that roster. Now, obviously, things have happened. You know, 25 guys have washed out of the program, and you got another, you know, how many, close to that many, who don't dress. So they've lost. There's been a lot of attrition in this USC program. It may not be that the recruiting is not there. Although I do think they haven't gotten, whether they've gotten guys with rankings or not, if you look at the offensive line, they're not as good as they were ranked. I mean, they're recruiting star. And I know that, you know, development hasn't happened, and maybe the, you know, the strength program and all of that hasn't happened. But just basically, when I look at Washington State's offensive line, and they're probably average two stars, and they're way better than USC's offensive line. They only ask them to, you know, pass protect mostly, but you know, there's some maybe places where USC's offensive line recruits may not be all that far behind Alabama and Georgia and Clemson, but they're way, way, way behind in terms of the ability to play and where they are right now. So it may not be a perfect, you know, correlation between the rankings and where they are, but USC is such an outlier in terms of the rankings, not of recruits don't match the rankings, you know, on the field.
Yeah, so I think we're referring to, there's 24/7 does a talent composite index where it doesn't look at the recruiting classes per se, because a lot of people leave. And I put in my column, and what Shotgun had talked about in the war room last week, it was upwards of about 25 guys that are no longer on the roster. So if you count just the recruiting classes, like, that's a lot of guys that are missing. But it'll look at the roster as it's composed, and it'll count up the number of 3 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars. And it's like, basically, it's kind of like ranking the recruiting class, but it's everybody on your roster. So USC gets ranked number 4 in the country behind Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. And you could say, well, recruiting rankings don't mean everything and stars, blah, blah, blah. But it's a pretty good indication of the top 3 teams are really freaking good. And USC is number 4, and they should probably be pretty freaking good. And they're 5 and 6. They're not 5 and 7 yet. I'm not going to slip and say 5 and 7 again. Because We don't know. They could upset Notre Dame. They have enough talent to upset Notre Dame, because they got more talent than Notre Dame, according to the index, you know?
Yeah. To be honest, it wouldn't. I mean, and going back to the USC history, I looked at what happens to when they play back-to-back, Notre Dame and USC. And I looked at the first USC coach that lost to UCLA. And was Don Kravitz, I guess, is his name. I think that was his first name. Anyway, in 1950, he loses 39. That USC team loses 39-0 to UCLA, and I mean, that was unheard of for UCLA to crush USC like that. The next week, in the Coliseum, here comes Notre Dame. USC beats them 9-7. It's like, how does that happen? So stuff like that does happen. I'm not saying it can't happen this week. Hey, like you said, Ryan, USC's got technically more talent. So I'm not sure I'm among the people who keep saying USC has absolutely no chance. Crazy stuff happens. It's just the lack of physicality and the lack of the ability to just stay in there with people that play with power and physicality, it makes it so difficult for USC. It just, when teams line up and really come at you. I mean, UCLA did it with a bunch of, young kids that nobody thought much of. And Notre Dame's got some players. I mean, the quarterback now and the running back are really good. And they've become physical as heck. And, but I would tell people, you still might go to the game and see what happens. Crazy stuff happens. You just never know.
All right. I think we're going to wrap it up. Got to head over to practice and see what transpires. Because who knows?
Practice?
Practicing for...
You're talking practice?
For the game, apparently. We're getting some, so it's funny, Keely and I both tweeted out like that GoFundMe thing. So they've raised $3,500 already.
Yep.
Which is insane. And apparently a full page ad in the LA Times costs like 20 grand or something. Is that right?
Crazy.
That seems insane too. No wonder that newspapers are struggling. I don't know why would if it's going to charge $20,000 for an ad, like I'm not paying that for, but anyway, but then we're getting some pushback for people who are like, well, you should like donate the money to fire victims. It's like, we didn't start this. This was completely a fan.
Yeah. I'm confused. Right. Are people mad at us? Cause we didn't do this.
No, someone's tweeting me like, well, why would a, reputable media organization do that? I'm like, no, this is someone on our message board. We didn't start it. We didn't, it's just like amazing that it was happening. And it's tough. People care about it. I think people given obviously a lot of money to fire victims and stuff too. You could draw a line at anything. Like, why'd you go out to dinner? You should have just donated that money to the fire victims and stuff. So I get what they're saying, but I mean, there's a lot of passionate fans that are really upset of what's going on here. And they're speaking with their pocketbooks right now or their wallets.
I guess so.
They don't do that much. So
I've never seen anything like this. Like, someone tweeted me that they did a UCLA for Alford for, they did 2 banners and that didn't work, I guess, but
yeah, it didn't work.
Hold on. There's a, yeah.
I guess it's hard to fly those at night over a basketball arena.
Yeah. I don't know.
It doesn't have the same impact if you're inside Poly Pavilion and there's a plane flying overhead. Probably doesn't matter too much. I don't know.
Well, they're definitely going to get, I've seen positive tweets and negative tweets from this, but it's like, I'm just shocked. Like that someone, I didn't even know, like, so I got a tweet or a text from like someone at 24/7 about it, about the GoFundMe thing. And I guess I had missed it. I didn't see it that they were talking about that. And I was like, what do you mean? And so, yeah, so they just started up on the site. And I mean, that's where the fans are right now. They are not happy with what's going on. And it's, and with Lin Swan not speaking out, and we've reached out to try to talk to him. And like Dan said, it was more of a kind of a king speaking to his subjects sort of situation when he went on the you know, USC radio and said what he had to say. He's not allowed, no questions, nothing from anyone like us. So I get it. They're frustrated. Like, they want to hear from him, and they haven't. And so they're trying to get their voice heard, I guess.
A lot of frustration. Players, fans, you name it. Frustration is the name of this season, pretty much, I think. And you almost have to expect that it's going to break out. I mean, you hate to see it with the players doing some of the stuff they've done. And, you know, you're not crazy about, you know, the fans doing some of this, but you got to kind of expect it and say, you know, hey, they feel that's the only way they can be heard.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. That's our good friend, Dan Weber, on the line via Skype. Hi, Dan.
Yes, it is.
And we got Keely Yore here in studio.
Hello.
Hi, Keely.
Are we doing an intro again? What's happening,
I don't
Ryan?
Know. This is just the weird. This is, I don't
Your
even know where I am.
Your intro and outros, this podcast has been interesting.
My analogy game is good. I'm just baffled that we spent a lot of time yesterday writing war room stuff, doing all this GoFundMe. There's so many weird things going on. I thought with Clay Helton, we were kind of over it.
It's
USC,
though. It's USC. Madness continues.
Right. Just since you've been doing this, Keely, like, you know, you were you Kiffin at all?
No. I came in right when Sark was hired.
Okay. So, but even like, so you missed some of the crazy stuff.
Yeah, I missed the real crazy.
But there was real, no, I think Sark was the real crazy.
Okay, true.
Because Sark was Josh Shaw, too, right? Like,
Yeah.
Yeah, who just got signed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, apparently.
I always laugh because when Josh Shaw happened, I was like, wow, I finally covered one crazy thing. And then that was literally the start of it.
Yeah. But we'll see. That's our job, covering USC. But thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition. We'll play that last voicemail to you from Jeff, the math teacher in Fountain Valley. Thanks again. And we'll talk to you next time.
Hey, gentlemen and lady Keely, if you're listening, this is Jeff, the math teacher from Fountain Valley. I've been listening to the Parrotstyle podcast since day one. Thank you for everything you guys do. I've emailed in several times over the years. This is my first time calling, and guess what I want to talk about? You're going to be shocked, Clay Helton. I've got a little bit of a different take, though. It seems like every single person who talks about Clay Helton always has this asterisk, but he's such a nice guy. Oh, but he's so genuine. He's a good guy. And I'm just wondering, does a good guy lie straight to your face? Because his little routine is wearing thin with me. I mean, how many times after a terrible loss or a win that was uglier than it should have been, has he been asked questions and just given some crazy disingenuous answers? Like, 73 out of 74 snaps were perfect. No, they weren't. We were watching, not even close. Or John Baxter is one of the best special teams coaches in the country. Let's try again on that one. And then my favorite, which we hear so many times. I mean, how many times after a game has he been asked about something that's not going well on the football field? And he has said, we're going to work on that. It's going to get better. We'll improve on that. Well, at some point, you're not just incorrect when you make those statements, Coach Helton. You're lying. Because you have no intention of improving those things. You're not making any effort towards improving those things. You're not making the choices that need to be made in order to improve on those things. You're not holding anybody accountable to change for the better. So, Clay Helton, your nice guy act is wearing thin with a lot of us. And we're tired of it, and we can see through it. And in a way, it makes it a little bit more difficult for us because, you know, when Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian were being demonstrably bad football coaches, but they were also being demonstrably bad human beings, it was really easy to wish them an unceremonious exit. With you, Clay Helton, I'm starting to feel a little bit better and better every week about wanting you to go. I wanted you to succeed when you started, but this has got to stop. We deserve better as fans. I mean, like many of the people listening to this, I'm an alumni and I've been a fan since I was a kid. USC football is what made me love football. It's what made me love USC. And it's just, it's really hard to watch the state of the program right now. And we deserve better. So that's my take. Love to hear what you guys have to say about that. And finally, thank you, Sir Eric of Troy. What a refreshing voice. What a good job he did. Thanks for being so well-spoken and really enunciating a lot of the thoughts and feelings of us out here. So fight on, everybody. See you later.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.